We have great conversations every week, and I want to encourage you to go back. Get the app if you don't have it yet. All the podcasts live on the app. But if you don't want to get the app or you don't want to listen on your phone, listen wherever you find your podcasts. That is a great thing. The conversation with Dr. Derek Butler last week on Wednesday was an eye-opener about what's going on with sexually transmitted diseases in our community right now. Yes, grown folks, grown and sexy. You might want to go back and listen to that one. And more. Renata Simarel from LA 84 was on. You might want to catch that one. Really, really great stuff. But I'm excited because joining us now in studio, he was born and raised in the 2nd District of LA County. He makes sure you know. He, even though he's got family on the East Coast, he's a true LA native. He's dedicated his life and law practice to justice, love, and unity. He says he's a graduate of Hampton University and Howard School of Law. Attorney Jaye Person Lynn, good morning.
Good morning, Dominique. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my.
Here.
You look like you're headed to court.
Yes, yes.
He's got the 3-4-piece suit with the
whole. Three-piece.
Looking
three
good, looking good.
Thank you, Dominique.
Yes, very professional. If I had a case right now, I'd feel confident seeing you coming into the courtroom to represent
me. Feel good. I hope my client thinks the same.
I hope they do, too. I'm sure they would. I'm sure they do. So it is 4/29 once again, 4/29/24.
Yes.
32 years since L.A. broke out in rebellion, civil unrest, right? Whatever you call it. I usually...
Uprising.
Uprising. Uprising. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Your parents are both progressive activists in their own way. But I think I thought about you because I thought about the way that our rights are changing, have changed when it comes to protests. We could draw that line probably all the way back to 1776, or we could go, if we're in L.A., to 1965, right?
Yeah.
Watts Uprising, Watts Rebellion, 92, 2020, right now.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have... How do you see our rights? Do you think we have the same rights, or are they being honored in the same way now that they were in 2020 or in 1992?
For the descendants of the enslaved Africans in the United States of America, I would say that we're not too much different as far as the exercise of our freedom of speech. We're different than prior to 1865, but after that point, we're not too much different. We had a...
That's laugh to keep from crying laughter
Yeah,
that's laugh to keep from crying.
Because when you think about it, it's like, okay, we've been marching and protesting since the 60s. They've been getting water hosed. We don't get water hosed anymore. Maybe that's the progress that we've made. But we're still being arrested. We're still being hunted. People who do organize, the leaders of those organizations are still being prosecuted. So I don't see that the descendants of enslaved Africans in the U.S. have changed much, but it's the others that are now feeling it as the spread of the type of government that ruled us with an iron fist is now spreading and ruling the nation with that same iron fist.
That's interesting. So for you, the main change in rights for black people in America, especially black Americans, comes with the Emancipation Proclamation. And since then, it's pretty much about the same.
Overall, yeah. I mean, outside of the water hoses.
Right. Yeah. Well, now we have other things. We got tasers and rubber bullets and things.
Yes. And we still experience those greatly. And even when we're not in a state of protest, we're still being hunted. You still see black men lined up on walls having their pictures taken.
Yeah.
And this is not just Los Angeles. This is all around the United States. So it's the kind of thing, even, you know, when I think about the cases I deal with, the people that were just witnesses in the case, they still got brought into the police station with handcuffs. They still got their homes raided. They still got treated like criminals. And then as a goal to force to scare them into helping the police. So we're still treated that same way. Those same tactics that were used to get enslaved people to snitch on rebellions or plans to escape are still being used. Those same very tactics are still being used by the police in our day-to-day lives. And now that we look at these non-descendant of enslaved Africans in these protests all throughout the nation on these college campuses and seeing the police response to them, it just goes to show that that kind of treatment, when you accepted it for us as a society, the police got used to that and said, this is how we treat people. And now you want to protest, and now you're realizing that, no, this is the state of the police state of the United States of America.
I think there's a little caveat I'd throw in there, which is that when the white supremacists march, that's not how police treat people. Charlottesville, that's not how police treated people. That's not how we see them being treated. Even when, you know, Nazis march here in L.A.,
well, think about how many law enforcement officers were found to be participants of Charlottesville or January 6th versus when the black community is rising up and rebelling. There's not like black police officers getting caught out there in the crowds, getting arrested with the people. And so, of course, you're not going to treat those that you view as yourself the same as you treat those that you view as
those that you view as yourself. Attorney Jaya Person Liz got bars this morning. Those that you view as yourself. Okay, well, I think that when you look at what's going on in college campuses, I have questions, right, about rights. And here in Los Angeles, we have a good example, which is UCLA, where they've hired private security, put up metal barricades to keep the counter-protesters away from the protesters and just call it a day. You know, okay, you got tents. Okay, technically it's against university policy, but guess what? It's a protest, all right? Whereas at USC, you know, immediately freak out, call in the cops, 93 people arrested, people cop handled, you know, dragged around, thrown on the ground.
And council.
So, I mean, how does that reflect our right to assemble or our right to free speech?
Well, I do think we have to acknowledge the differences in the UCLA campus being public property and the USC campus being private property. But the USC campus is still using public resources in the form of the Los Angeles Police Department to enforce their private rules. And I'm all for institutions, private institutions, being able to set their rules within the bounds of the Constitution that we have here and enforce those rules. I'm a graduate of Hampton University. This is my 20-year. And Hampton University is known for its rules. No
Congrats.
Hats inside. Thank you.
No what inside?
No hats.
No hats, really.
Yeah, Kirtwood is one of the few colleges that still have a curfew for freshmen when they start. And so those things I'm okay with. But as it relates, where the problem comes in is, you know, there's no First Amendment right to not having a curfew. But there is a First Amendment right to peaceably assemble in protest of government actions. And that's
even on private property.
And that's where it gets different. And so USC is standing on that. This is private property. You don't have the same rights in public that you have. And maybe the protesters just need to camp out on the sidewalk. But then there's municipal codes against blocking the sidewalks.
Right. You'd have to get a permit. But, yeah. I mean, the other thing, to your point, I would take it even a little further than they're using the public resource of the police. They gobble up all kinds of USC. I mean, county money, state subsidies, city money, all of the city resources that they use disproportionately, water and all kinds of other things. And I'm not necessarily saying that's bad, that we supplement a private institution that costs so much, $100,000 a year to go to, because it brings jobs and prestige, and it's, you know, an important institution in Los Angeles, but for them to act like they're a private country club and just wholesale arrest students and have them thrown in jail. And then not just USC. I mean, you look at Columbia and other universities, which are not only removing students from campus, they're suspending them. Yeah. They're reaching out to employers and trying to get them pre-fired before they even started their jobs. They're trying to ruin their careers. That to me is like totalitarian, straight up. It's like what you would expect, you know, not from a democracy or a republic, yeah, which is supposed to be a direct democracy.
Yes, well, I'm of the belief that have not been a democracy for quite some time.
Why do you say that?
Well, there's just the history of our people that's never been a full democracy. But even with the greater, broader society, mm-hmm, once the Patriot Act was instituted as law, it really had us giving up rights and privacies that are necessary for a true democracy to be played out. And so now we're living in a authoritative state, a police state, where our movements, our communications are being monitored. It's lawful for them to do so. And it's now that people are rejecting that because that is the American way. You know, when we look at the Bill of Rights and that second, third paragraph that says when the government ceases to meet the needs of the people, it's the right of those people to abolish that government. Now we're on that part. That government is not wanting to give up its power because they're in a power never concedes power. They're not going to give it up. But people are rejecting it. And what I hope the broader society sees and those in power see is the long-term effects of this and the impact that it's going to have on those people. And things will shift, culture will shift, influence will shift. And I don't think USC particularly is going to lose too much of its prestige. But in the long run, it certainly could, especially if there's another option that emerges.
Yeah, I think they're probably not worried about their prestige. You're right. And I had a friend who's a student tell me, well, if there's foreign students are coming from totalitarian countries, they're probably not shocked, yeah, that their students are being arrested for protesting.
Yeah.
You know, if your kid is coming from Saudi Arabia to go to USC, maybe they're not shocked. But is that a good thing? I don't think that's a good thing. I think it's a problem.
I think it is a problem that is going to create more allies and outright objectors to those in power currently. And I think it's showing the divide and the fact that there's not a lot of connection thought process-wise, and there's no mental connections and between the youth, or not that there's none, but they're lacking, the youth and those in power now. And so no matter what, the next 20 years is going to come. And those 20-year-olds that are being mishandled by police today will be 40-year-olds in positions of power.
They're radicalizing a whole new generation.
And we'll see where that takes
by
us.
By acting up.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, this isn't a legal question, really, but why don't the universities just sit down with student leaders and create dialogue? I remember when we were occupying buildings on the campus of San Francisco State, we were always trying to save our School of Ethnic Studies,
yeah,
which was constantly in danger of being shut down, that they would always at least try to meet with us and talk to us and talk, yeah, us off the ledge. They didn't just send SFPD in there, drag us out. And we were definitely illegal. We would be inside of faculty offices and admin buildings refusing, yeah, to leave.
Yeah.
Sitting down.
It seems like the right thing to do. But this issue is different, because we're talking about an issue that has a global impact. Not to say that that department at San Francisco State didn't put out people like yourself that have a global impact.
Thank you.
But when we're looking at what's being protested on these college campuses, this is beyond, yeah, what goes on those college campuses. This is these students saying divest. They're talking. I haven't seen a divestment movement like this since apartheid in South Africa.
Yep.
And I remember it was like a Shell gas station around here who were outside like, don't come to this Shell.
I mean, look, we were protesting that on campus too,
yeah.
Right? But I don't know. I feel like partly because of we're in the age of social media, the students can gather so much more quickly and it's bigger, right? It spreads more quickly. Yeah. And also just because we are in more of a police state, that it seems more likely that they're just going to go to that as a first line of defense instead of communicating with your own students. I was so happy to see faculty. I am happy to see faculty standing with the students. Are those, I mean, some of them are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
Are they in any legal jeopardy beyond that?
I think it depends on their status. If they're tenured, then it's going to be, it's always difficult to remove a tenured professor for expressing, you know, intellectual thoughts and acting upon those intellectual thoughts, which I think any faculty or staff that participates in these protests can certainly intellectualize the reasons why they're participating in this protest.
Right.
And write an article and, you know, maybe help that university gain that prestige. And I don't have any doubt that a year from now, USC will be having those discussions. It's just right now.
A year, 5 years. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
What about the Supreme Court sending the case around, the McKesson case, back to the state level, meaning that in Texas and Louisiana, at least, protest organizers can be held liable for anything that happens at a protest, which is an economic, legal way of making protests unsustainable or bankrupting protesters and protest organizers. And we could see that spreading around the country, or it could end up back at the Supreme Court and they can rule that we, the protest organizer, are financially liable, legally liable for anything that happens. So that way, when you have outside agitators, plants and ops come in and mess things up, as they often do, they can shut a person down.
Yeah, and that's scary to think that possibility is really out there. But you also know for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So, like, throughout 2020 and that time, you heard a lot about Antifa doing things. But if that was the case, right, who would you hold liable in Antifa? I don't know that they have representatives. I don't even know if they have a website. But you have all of these groups now. It will send the resistance completely underground. And now it's going to be very difficult for them to even bring forth those. But it's certainly going to have a chilling effect on those that do want to organize the right way and get permits and bring people out, because it's nothing for a police agency to hire a couple agitators, take what was a peaceful protest and turn it into a violent riot, and then now charge the organizer for anything that happens. I definitely see that happening. And so it's quite scary, but I think the response to that, I think that spirit of freedom of speech and freedom of protest is going to trump that. And if that does happen, it will be a step closer to the people regaining the power over the government.
I mean, it has already happened if you're in Texas or Louisiana, but if it happens on a more widespread level, I'm thinking about it just listening to you talking, Jai Person Lin, and I'm thinking that means the kind of super organized protest, the kind of protest that Reverend James Lawson teaches and advocates for, could become more important in that kind of a scenario.
Yeah.
Because that's almost like setting up a formula. If I want to shut you down, all I have to do is let you organize a protest and send in some Nazi to, kill a Heather Heyer, crash a car into some people. Now you're liable.
Yeah. And it goes across the board, right? Because you have the Women's March. It could happen too. You have all the pro-Israel, the anti-Israel, the pro-Palestine. And where the government stands in each region is going to change. And who gets held liable will change in those regions. I know all across the world, anything related to the descendants of enslaved Africans is going to be, I think governments are unilateral in that. And even with this protest, it's like, wow, seeing the black leaders of governments using their police forces and things like that to suppress these protests.
It's disgusting.
It is, especially when so many of those leaders have been elected from the pipeline of those leaders that would stand and be arrested when they were protesting. The issues that they felt were wrong or immoral or hurtful and harmful to their people or to the world. And so to come up in that line to uphold good trouble and talk about being in good trouble, and then now you get to that position and you calling that police chief saying, hey, get him out of there, use whatever force you
right.
need, it's quite contradictory, and it's really going to show and I think separate and open the eyes for those who didn't realize it could happen to them. Like, they might have agreed with the police response to 2020 and what was going on, but now that they're peaceably assembling, they're realizing, wow, this isn't just limited to black people arguing about their rights. This is now the standard and how we're going to be treated. And that it really does something to you as a person when you realize you don't have the freedoms that you were taught you had.
Right, that we're constantly told we had.
Yeah.
We just have a little less than a minute before news, traffic, and sports. I mean, it's got to be a crazy time for you as a legal mind, because I know you're an attorney and you represent, you know, you're active in court. You represent civil rights cases, criminal cases. But just looking at what's happening in the Supreme Court, the unprecedented criminal trial of a U.S. president, and so many other things, it's got to be just a crazy time to be a legal mind, and certainly one like yours that contemplates all these big issues. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on whichever of those are most important to you. Certainly last week was a wild week if your last name was Trump.
Yes.
We've got more after news, traffic, and sports on KBLA Talk 1580.
She's reclaiming her time on KBLA Talk 1580. More First Things First with Dominic DePrima when we come.
Where is Saul?
At KBLA Talk 1580, we do more than just talk.
You got a big mouth.
Hello, Joe, you're up. Welcome.
We're unapologetically progressive, and we don't black down.
And it is 4/29/24, and today you can join LA County's Department of Economic Opportunity, the City of Los Angeles, and Supervisor Holly Mitchell, speaking of the 2nd District, JIA, at the LA Coliseum for the launch of the Los Angeles Region Small Business Summit. It starts today. It goes from 9 to 3. It's free, 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 free. They've got this thing called the Economic Mobility Initiative. They can help you as an individual entrepreneur. They can help you as a nonprofit organization or a small business. Visit lacountyemi.com to register, or just stop by the LA Coliseum today, right after the show. Wow, so much to talk about. I teed up Trump, but during the news, traffic, and sports, we were talking about what's happening with the district attorney's office here in LA, where our state attorney general, Rob Bonta, has seen fit to bring charges against Diane Turan, who is under DA George Gascon, for allegedly misusing files and information about police officers. So I already did a rant about this, and then I got some more information that I didn't know. But I don't understand why a supposedly progressive, first Filipino, progressive DA, attorney general for the state, brings these charges, justifiable or not, right before the election. Now you've got this guy, Nathan Hochman, who's a far-right-wing conservative trying to be DA, going around on all these TV shows, and no one even checks him, saying, well, you're running against him. They just let him act like an expert. You know,
yeah.
You got all the little guys that were running for, I don't know why they got to be little guys, all the big guys that were running for DA and lost, all out there throwing dirt.
Yeah. It's something, and what we realizes that no matter what level, college student, DA, whatever, when you go against the police, there will be a strong response, and we are seeing that response. The charges are connected to, it was a big story when the DA sent over or released a bunch of names of deputy sheriffs who had committed things that they felt was Brady information, which is things that the prosecution has to turn over that tend to show that there's either innocence or that there's some problems with the law enforcement officers that are involved in this particular case. And so it's all related to that, that they're sharing this information, they're putting this information out there about these officers. And it's just quite astounding, like you said, a progressive prosecutor, but we see maybe he's not that progressive. And we also know these police unions are extremely powerful. And I believe he has higher political aspirations. And I don't know who's won a higher office without the support of law enforcement.
My brother has. Oh, wait, he did have the support of law enforcement, even though he put up a police oversight board with subpoena power. Okay, so look, if I die in prison, I didn't commit suicide. I was on this mic talking smack, and you guys know what time it is. But no, but seriously, I mean, it seems like almost election interference on the part of the attorney general. Then this woman Turan, okay, from what you're adding, even more context, which is not just random police files, but files showing misconduct by police that could disqualify their testimony in cases against individuals. So what you're saying is that this progressive district attorney, what we're finding, not what you're saying, this progressive district attorney is going after, attorney general is going after a progressive DA, one of his right-hand women, for releasing information that would hold police accountable for their misconduct.
Yes.
That's what we're doing right now.
That's what we're doing right now.
Make it make sense.
Well, this is California where, you know, liberal, and it's unique because when we go back to the 60s, when it comes to gun control, you had the Republican Party and the NRA instituting gun control and saying, hey, we need this. We need to get these guns out of the hands
of these
people.
Right, until the black people showed up with guns.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The NRA was actually writing rules on why California shouldn't be an open carry state anymore. And it's wild. And now we have, in present day, the liberal Democratic side now siding with law enforcement when the whole time they got to that point saying, hey, we're here for the people and law enforcement needs to be held in check.
I mean, but the other thing we were talking about is the targeting of progressives, right? Marilyn Mosby in Baltimore, who supposedly wrote, you know, did something wrong on her application, her real estate application to buy a vacation home.
Yeah.
Which is even what they're alleging is, you know, one thousandth of a percent of one count of what Trump did in his document, you know, in his real estate documents case. Then she's facing 40 years in prison, Marilyn Mosby, after going after Freddie Gray. You know, they took down Chesa Boudin. They're going after the Alameda County DA, Pamela Price, who went to Yale and Berkeley Law School. I mean, and you can go further than DAs. You could go to the targeting of Mark Ridley Thomas.
Yes, and Andrew Gillum in Florida.
In Florida. And I now understand that Turan was also behind the current Price case. Hmm. So you've got layers of supposedly progressives tearing down progressives. That's very discouraging.
It is very discouraging, and you realize that there's progressive and political ideologies, there's racial ideologies, and
conscious and unconscious.
Conscious and unconscious, and we see that, you know, who in this country, racial ideologies has always seemed to trump
everything.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
But it has seemed to trump everything, and now we're in a situation where it's all messed up, and you have people who were just trying to do what they felt is right and doing what, not just what they felt was right. Gascon got elected. He dethroned a sitting district attorney by a significant margin, and that the people spoke. This is what they wanted. And it's unique because the way the media is portraying him, like they're just letting people out. Meanwhile, I have back-to-back murder cases lined up. They're not letting these people out. They're not even offering these people deals that would get them home sooner than if they were convicted and sentenced. And so it's amazing for me to be in the system, seeing the prosecutions not change much, but yes, they have opened up more opportunities for people to get programs, for people to save their record. And there's thousands of cases where those people were successful in doing just that. They got the diversion. They stayed away from the system. They have a good job. They're being productive members of society. But then when somebody gets a bail who's on probation and goes out and commits another crime, that's the front page news over and over and over again. When there's hundreds and thousands of stories to the contrary, it's quite amazing to see, because in my particular position, I see it up close and personal, just how much the media portrayal of George Gascon is different. He is not letting these people walk. He is holding people accountable. He is just saying, hey, let's let the punishment fit the crime. And when there's an opportunity to redeem someone, let's do that. And that should be what we do first. It shouldn't be punished first. But there are those that have that mindset, like, you know, what was that mindset that was espoused by Joe Biden when he was arguing to pass the 1994 crime bill. Like, I don't care if they come from broken homes. I don't care if they've been traumatized and taught these things. These people are predators and they need to be taken off the street. That is the mindset of a lot of people, especially in law enforcement. And what they have are these huge budgets and this power and these guns and these bullets and these resources. And it's very difficult for those who are trying to stand up just on the political side without that basically military power that the police have to stand against them. And now we're seeing, Bonta folding to those police pressures.
800-920-1580, 800-920-1580. Attorney J.A. Person-Lynn is with me on this 42924, and you're listening to Unapologetically Outspoken, Unapologetically Progressive, KBLA Talk 1580.
More of First Things First with Dominique DePrima when we come forward. We knew you'd stick around. This is LA's home for progressive talk radio. Be heard. Welcome back to KBLA Talk 1580.
So if it ends up, if Diana Turan was an assistant DA under Gascon, if she ends up in trial, her attorneys say she was actually cooperating with the attorney general in their investigation, and they were blindsided by these charges. But if she gets convicted or even goes to trial, could that impact Curran Price's case?
I think it certainly could, in the way that when we look at the Trump case in Atlanta and Fannie being
distracted.
Yes. Looked at the way she's been looked at. Certainly, if I know there's a prosecutor on a case that I'm having that's being prosecuted for doing something wrong as a felony, even if I disagree with that prosecution on my client in the broader individual sense on my client's case, then we need to see what happens with this prosecutor, because the jury needs to know that a felon filed these charges and I'm going to do what I have to do for my client.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Yes, it's going to affect pretty much any cases she's touched.
Yeah, wow. So it could actually affect a lot of cases. And ironically, many of those will be against cops.
And there you
have it. Ironically and not at all surprisingly. Let's go to Morris calling us from Inglewood. Hi, Morris.
Hey, good morning to everybody. Happy Monday. I'm a little disappointed in President Biden. The President of the United States is responsible for protecting our rights. And these folks who are exercising their First Amendment rights, they have a right to do that. You know, it's funny, when it comes to the Second Amendment, everybody's all right with the Second Amendment. But when it comes to that First Amendment, they're a little bit slow about that. And I'm really hurt that the president hasn't done more to step up to protect their rights. And people need to understand that there's a differentiation between Zionism, and Judaism. Zionism is a sick, twisted, and sadistic ideology. It has nothing to do with the gospel, Judaism, or anything like that. And we should all remember that Jesus was a Palestinian Jew, and that the people you see in Israel today, they are imposters. They come from the United States, Russia, and Europe. They're not really Jewish people. So, this
oh boy, you're not going to start me on that conversation at 8:52, Morris. I mean, I don't know. Who are you? Who am I? Who is anyone to say who's a real Jewish person?
I got you 20 minutes earlier.
Yeah, because Judaism is a religion and an ethnicity, and a state of Israel is not. It's a Jewish state, but Israel is, you know, is a government. So that's a whole conversation we're not having right now. But you call me earlier on another day. what could a president do, right, Attorney Person Lynn, to support First Amendment rights of protesters or right to assembly?
Well, he can have his Department of Justice look into the pattern and practices of these local law enforcement agencies in suppressing these constitutional rights, which the caller was correct. It is the president's duty to protect the individual's constitutional rights. And so if he's deeming the LAPD, for instance, using the tactics they used at USC as a suppression of constitutional rights, now he can open up an investigation on the LAPD.
And what are the odds Merrick Garland would do that? Slim and none, but it's a good point.
Yeah,
it's a point as well taken. Hey, Jaya Person Lynn, you're an attorney. I know this wasn't our topic today for 429, but when you saw the Supreme Court hearing arguments about immunity for a president, which wouldn't just apply to Trump, it would apply to everybody forevermore.
Yes.
What was your reaction?
It's a mixed reaction, because obviously I don't want to live in a place where the leader has just unfettered power and they can do anything and not be charged or condemned or convicted or taken out of power. But then it also made me think, like, what does that mean for impeachment purposes, right? If they have complete immunity, I guess that would just be from criminal prosecution, because an impeachment isn't necessarily a criminal prosecution. You just get taken out of office, not necessarily put in jail. But it also it does track, because we have these judges who are out here making decisions that are violating thousands and hundreds and millions of people's lives. And the Supreme Court just overturns the decision, says they were wrong, but they don't take that judge even off the bench, nor do they prosecute that judge for making that incorrect ruling. So that means we live in a society that we have to give a certain amount of immunity to those in power who are making these tough
decisions.
I mean,
we don't have to. We do.
We do. Yeah.
We don't have to. Judges should be accountable for terrible decisions that they make.
Yeah. And, you know,
just as politicians should.
And yeah, but it's a difference when it comes to a criminal level of accountability.
I mean, you saw Ketanji Brown Jackson, certainly to me, was flexing her intellect. Yes. And, you know, had the Trump lawyer on the ropes. And then, you know, here comes Neil Gorsuch interrupting. Before you embarrass yourself any further, let me jump in here and save you.
Yeah. But this is what it is. Like, Trump set up his defense by those Supreme Court appointments. And even before those Supreme Court appointments, because remember, Merrick Garland is supposed to be on that bench.
Yes.
And
plus, we should have another seat too.
Yeah.
The Amy Coney Barrett seat should be somebody.
Yeah, but we don't. And so Trump
Michelle
is
Obama. How about that?
Trump set his he set his self up to be protected by this Supreme Court. And it's interesting, because I am a big proponent of the Second Amendment, so I knew this Supreme Court would support that. But all these other issues are coming up now, which, you know, it's really more related to Trump.
But they don't support the Second Amendment for you, though.
Yeah, well, they've at least said that I can get a concealed carry permit without needing good cause.
Yeah, we got to do that show soon. We really got to do that show soon. But okay, so. But the bottom line is, if they were to rule that he had unlimited immunity, that changes our country. I mean, there's no way you can convince me that Nixon didn't think he was going to face criminal charges. Why would he have to get Ford to pardon him?
Yeah, and that's...
Why would he run out of office?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. What they're saying doesn't make any sense. And limited immunity sets up an endless process of figuring out what falls under immunity and what doesn't, which also lets, you know, the Orange Menace off the hook.
And we look at what qualified immunity has done for law enforcement officers who are on the lowest level of the civil servants. So you can imagine what it would do for those at the highest level,
which is now unqualified immunity. Really, it means like you can do anything.
And that's if a law enforcement officer cannot even be taken off of their job for killing someone because they did their job negligently, but they did it in the course of their job, then now how can you say a president should be criminally prosecuted for something they did while on their job?
Well, but see, we need to go the other direction, which is no one's above the law. Cop, president, judge.
Yeah, but that would, you know, that's a dream. That's a dream. Maybe we get there.
You know what? I'm going to suck you. I'm leaning on Frederick Douglass. A true patriot is the one, you know, that calls out his country and challenges them to be better.
Certainly.
Challenges us to be better. Remind people how they can follow you. You always got a lot to say.
Yeah. Lincoln Lawyer LA on Instagram, Jai Person Lynn on Facebook. And just, you know, wherever you may find me, I'm not out as much. I have my babies.
Right, you Jareen got two under
Roshi.
Three.
Yeah, two under two.
Still
well,
under
no,
two.
No, not two under two. My oldest, Jareem, is two. It's exciting times, but I tell you, after hearing all of this and thinking of all of this, I'm wondering if I'm negligent for raising a black man in this society.
No, you're not. We need more of us. We need more of us. That's how we save the world. It's always black people saving America, saving the world, creating medicine, civilization, architecture.
When I was reading that second book in the Bible, and I was feeling real connected to those people.
We got to go. Tavis Smiley is up right now. I know he's got a powerful show on deck for you because I see some people assembling that looked kind of interesting. Thurgood Marshall said, where you see wrong or inequality or injustice, speak out, because this is your country. This is your democracy. Make it, protect it, pass it on. That's my quote for today. What you smiling about?
I'm just so thankful that you had me here this morning.
I'm so thankful that you came. I'm always thankful for the way that you challenge us. And it's Talking Point Tuesday tomorrow, so tap in with me then. History is now, and we are making it together. I'm Dominique DePrima. Until tomorrow, one love.